Okay, I'm gonna call the meeting to order. It's 6:09, and if we'd please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, meeting with Director Simon.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele, not here. Vice President Pease.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Lee.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Okay, we're going to open up public comments. This is the part of the meeting where the public can comment to the board on any item that is not on the agenda. We have a 3-minute time limit. Do we have any public comments? Seeing none, we'll close public comments and go into, we have any presentations? No presentations. President's report and director's comments. Do we have any comments from the board?
Not at this time.
Okay. We'll move on to the consent calendar.
Make a motion to pass the consent calendar.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. And we'll go on to business items, the review of the urban water management plan. Manager Howard.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, public. This evening, we're going to be discussing our urban water management plan. The urban water management plan has been required by the state since 2010, with an earlier version required back in 2005. We are presenting to the board this evening our first draft of our first 2010 urban water management plan. And the reason that it is delayed from the 2010 date has more to do with the fact that back in 2010, 11, 12, and into late 2012, we were in the process of developing the water master plan. The water master plan has many, many components that are included in that are integral to the urban water management plan. And so Ludorf and Scalmanini, the firm that presented and developed the urban water the water management plan, is also the firm that's developed the urban water management plan draft document that's before you this evening. Justin Shobe and John Fawcett are here, as well as Tom Elson, to discuss the urban water management plan specifically. And then they'll go through a PowerPoint presentation with you and be able to provide you with just a brief overview of what the plan entails. And once it leaves this board this evening, it will then go to our local agencies that are our peer review agencies within the region here, as well as the state of California for a review period. We'll also at that point, Justin will get into that, I think, describe the public hearing process that needs to take place. So once it's here before you this evening, it's not the final time you're gonna see it. I believe we're gonna see it two more times.
At least one more time.
At least one more, if not two more times, we'll come back to you. So with that, Justin, why don't you go ahead and get going on your presentation, and unless the board has any questions moving before that.
Rick, let's put a mic up there so we can hear him.
He's got one in front of him.
Oh, you can see it.
Can you see the screen up there?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just scan.
We just want to make sure it gets recorded.
Okay. Okay. Everyone hear me?
Right.
Okay. Rick, thank you for the introduction. I'd like to thank the board for having us here to present the urban water management plan, and the public as well. As Rick mentioned, this is a draft document, so we're here to review it, to get comments on it, to help you understand what it is and what's included in the plan. Our focus was going to be solely on the draft urban water management plan, but due to the timing of the governor's executive order, we thought it would be worthwhile at least to go over some of the main bullet points for the emergency drought regulations. Given that it's a focus on conservation as well as the Urban Water Management Plan is also a document that focuses on conservation, though it's a focus for a long-term conservation, whereas the governor's emergency order is more of a short-term emergency conservation that's mandatory as a result of the drought. So first, before I get into the plan, I've already prepared these slides and I'll go through them quickly. I have a lot to cover, so I'm gonna try to go through these pretty quickly so that we can move on with other items. And I'd just like to also say we prepared this draft urban plan in coordination with Rick and Virgil Caney and others within the staff in the district. And we worked with Herwood Engineering to obtain parameters and Veolia to obtain specific parameters that were needed for filling out the information that was required in this plan. So just briefly, as an overview of the emergency drought regulations, on April 1st, the executive order came out declaring the state of emergency, stating it's the most severe drought on record, and this is the first ever mandatory reductions of its kind in the state. The emergency order covers topics that were labeled as save water, increase enforcement, streamline government response, and invest in new technologies. And that's the focus that these regulations are going to be having. And the goal of these regulations is to have a 25% statewide reduction in potable water, potable urban water use. And they in the general order, in the executive order itself, outlined some elements to help achieve that, such as replacing 50 million square feet of lawns, offering rebates for older appliances. So there will be a time-limited rebate that's going to be offered by the Energy Commission, so we should look out for those. Imposing restrictions on industrial, commercial, and institutional, such as campuses and golf courses. They're focusing a lot on irrigation for landscaping. They're going to prohibit any potable water use on turfs that are in street medians, and on landscaping for new homes that are not equipped with drip or microspray systems. So those are some of the details of the executive order itself, and not necessarily the regulations that are coming out. This was in the governor's order. And then they also said that they wanted the water board to work with agencies in terms of rates and penalties to help encourage conservation. This is a table that was put together that demonstrates that the state's saying 25% statewide, but they want to apportion those reductions so that suppliers that are already conserving aren't penalized, and those that have a higher per capita use would have faced greater reductions. And so they have a four-tiered system, and the fourth tier is those that use over 165 gallons per capita per day. They measure that from September 2014. That's the metric they're using to gauge where you stand in this tiered system to see how much what your conservation standard is. It's worth noting there's 135 suppliers in that tier four range, which is the largest number of suppliers is in the tier four range. So there's many that are. And the tables that they issued show Discovery Bay in that tier four range, which would mean a 35% mandatory reduction. And that mandatory reduction would be measured from June of this year to February of next year. The state average is even in the tier four range. The state average is 195 gallons per capita per day. We're looking at those numbers closely with Rick as we speak, and it's worth taking a look and seeing if you know, the 227 might be high, but it would take quite a bit to get down to that tier three range. So it might be that Discovery Bay is realistically going to be placed in the tier four range and faced with those the higher conservation standard. So the compliance, like I said, is going to be based on June through February. They want to focus on reducing summer month mainly, and they're going to look at compliance monthly and over the cumulative for that period of time. They're going to compare this June to February to that of 2013 and 2014. Looking at the production records of Discovery Bay, Discovery Bay reduced the water between the years of 2013 to 2014. So 2013 was a higher water use year than 2014. So I guess what I'm saying is the water use for Discovery Bay is already on the right track in terms of reducing its water and meeting these conservation standards.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
If we reduced in 2014, which I'm under the impression we reduced 20 to 30%, it was about 20, Rick? Roughly 20?
During the time frame that the monitoring took place, yes, about 18%. And the average was 18%.
They want another 35% on top of that?
No, it would be based on 35% less than the 2013.
Okay. Because you said into 14, and that's happened.
It's from June of 2013 to February of 2014.
I misunderstood.
The tiered
is only based on September of 2014. Once they set the tier, they know what your reduction standard is, and they measure compliance based on, it is confusing. They measure the compliance based on what you use from June 2013 to February 2014. So
if I can add one more thing.
Yeah.
If you recall, in October 2014, that's when our new ordinance number 25 went into effect. So, and that was when we really stepped up our advertising, and I think not only ours, our outreach, but the state outreach as well. And we've seen the numbers go down significantly from September through February, actually through March. But remember, those are also winter months as well. So it's going to be, the telltale sign is going to be what happens from now through next September.
So they lay out some enforcement protocol, and they haven't specifically laid it out, but they've basically said there will be a mixture of informal warning letters if compliance isn't met. It would increase the cease and desist orders if compliance is not met with actions in a timeline, and if those actions or timelines aren't met, then they said they would be imposing penalties up to $10,000 a day of noncompliance. So there would be some form of a process before you get to those penalties, but that's basically what they're, what they're saying they're going to use to enforce the mandatory reductions. The schedule right now is they're taking comments on the draft regulatory framework, which was issued on April 7th. On the 17th, the draft regulations will actually be available. So at the end of this week, the actual regulations that are going to be imposed will be available for review and comment. And there will be a board hearing on a state board hearing on May 5th or 6th to adopt and to adopt the regulations. So compliance would start on June 1st.
What was the date that we have to give comments on, Bobby?
I think the comments in by, well, they're gonna have a board meeting on May 5th or 6th. I think before the end of April, you need to have comments, I would say. But I don't think I saw that on the schedule.
So the framework that they proposed so far is informal. They're accepting comments. When they actually propose the regulatory framework and the draft regulations, they'll have a formal protest or formal comment period, and they'll take those up to the date of the May 5th, May 6th hearing.
Okay.
And so at that time, you can make public comments at the hearing as well.
So it's informal now until
informal until the 17th
are out, then
the regulations will come out.
Right. Up to the date of the hearing.
Up to the date of the hearing.
So, here's just some bullets that we have for suggestions. I mean, I think that this is real, this is happening, and there will be some form of mandatory reductions. And so one consideration would be another ordinance similar to what was done in 2013 for the reductions. There was an ordinance that 2014, Discovery Bay had an ordinance. And we have a draft of an ordinance that's like that, but a little bit more detailed. It's actually an Appendix C of the Urban Water Management Plan, and we call it the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. This draft Water Shortage Contingency Plan is actually an element that was required to be written as part of the urban water management plan. The state wants every agency to have some sort of a draft ordinance in place in the event that there's catastrophic failure of water supply, there's a reduction in emergency water supply. And I think that this mandatory reduction would kind of qualify because it's being imposed and enforced by the state. So maybe utilizing that draft plan and modifying it as needed to fit the specific situation would be a good starting point. And then looking into what kinds of prohibitions and penalties might be imposed for Discovery Bay. There are certainly some that the state's imposing, and Discovery Bay might have an ordinance that matches those types of prohibitions, and maybe even considers others. But they talk about reducing watering schedules, not allowing hoses that aren't controlled with a shutoff nozzle, not washing driveways and sidewalks, not having fountains and water features. So I think, like Rick said, public information is a great tool, and it's a good time to start informing residents about this. There will be some rebates coming out. It would be a good time for people to look at how old are their appliances, their washing machines, their dishwashers, their faucets, their toilets. There will be some rebates coming out, so possibly people can pick up on those. You know, maybe it's a good year to start thinking about front yard conversions if people aren't, you know, into their lawns. I mean, I think there's a big focus on the front yard in the summertime use, because that's really where the water demand picks up. That really is the low-hanging fruit. People want to reduce their own water consumption. So grass to gardens or some other type of drought-tolerant landscape. The state's also pushing on targeting on commercials and schools' water use. There's not too much in Discovery Bay for large commercial users. There are some large landscape uses that can look at in terms of watering schedules and whatnot. And then prohibitions that the state issues, I think Discovery Bay will have to consider, or will have to probably incorporate those in their ordinance, such as the prohibition on watering of public street medians, watering grass within public street medians. So, and then this ongoing discussion of customer meters, this would be a good time to really think about that, as customer meters provide a tool for actually tracking and managing water use throughout the system. So that's all I wanted to cover on that topic. That was aside from the urban water management plan. Everything moving forward in this, I wanted to just summarize and present the draft urban water management plan. So if everybody's okay with that, I'm gonna just move on from the emergency ordinance, the emergency regulations, and move forward with the urban water management plan discussion. And so those topics are broken out into these categories. I want to first describe what the purpose is, compare it to what was previously done with the Water Master Plan, discuss some of the regulations that are governing for preparation of an urban water plan and that are relevant to it. And then within the urban plan, we have to set baseline water use and target water use reduction goals. And so we'll talk about what's written right now in the plan and how we arrived at those. The urban plan also requires a discussion of system supplies, the reliability of those supplies, and having a water shortage contingency plan in place. So we'll discuss that. Finally, demand management measures are a term used within the urban water management plan document, which is basically saying, you know, conservation measures is what they are. And that would be the measures and programs that would help achieve the target water use reductions. And then we'll just describe the next steps that Rick already kind of went over. So the purpose of an urban water plan is to direct a long-term planning water resource to meet existing and future demands. But it's a state-mandated document. So it's a document that the state requires. If you're an urban water supplier that has 3,000 or more service connections, or provides 3,000 or more acre feet per year, and it gives them a consistent reporting tools so that the state can see statewide what the water supply issues are facing each urban water supplier. And so it's a focus on supply and demand and not infrastructure. I wanted to emphasize that point, and I'll come back to that. The 2010 urban water plan was different than prior urban water plans in that it requires an element of conservation to meet the state's legislature for a water conservation plan. They call it the 20 by 2020 target. The state in 2009 issued a a water conservation plan that required water agencies to set a 20% reduction goal by 2020. So that's how the 2010 urban plan differed from prior urban water management plans. So in comparison to a water master plan, a water master plan is a planning document for agencies that's tailored towards the needs of the agencies. It's not a requirement by the state. It's a planning document that addresses supply, demand, and infrastructure needs over a planning horizon based on growth that's expected within the system, and it looks at regulatory issues that might be changing or faced within that time period. It culminates in a 10-year, the Discovery Bay plan culminated in a 10-year capital improvement plan to meet future growth, which feeds right into financial planning, setting rate structures, and annual budgets. I would say a water master plan is a document that ensures there's water in the tap. An urban water management plan is a state-mandated planning document. It has a guidebook, it has specific tables that need to be filled out and populated. It provides a consistent format for the state so they can assess what the statewide water issues are. And it focuses on the source issues. So in this case, groundwater basin adequacy, not infrastructure. They're not focused on, do you have enough wells to meet your maximum day demand? They're focused on, can the groundwater supply meet your future growth projections? And they want that in this specific format. They want it to be over a 20-year minimum population growth projection. And in the 2010 plan, they require a reduction target goal for every water supplier and incorporating demand management measures and conservation to meet those goals. Furthermore, it's required to do these if an agency wants to seek any sort of state funding or grants. That's really the teeth that the law has. So, real quick, just going to go over the slide real fast. It's relevant regulations to an urban water management plan. The top three there are really what make up the 2010 plan. It's the Urban Water Management Plan Act, which is a combination of a checklist of 60 items that need to be discussed, over 40 tables that need to be populated, and items that need to be addressed and discussed. And then the incorporation of Water Conservation Bill of 2009, which was that 20% reduction by the year 2020. Then there's water supply assessments and written verifications of water supply. These are not part of an urban water management plan, but these are the water supply assessment and the written verification of water supply were enacted in 2002, and they are assessments that link water supply to county land use, county planning decisions. So county planning officials and LAFCOs have to make sure these assessments are done before they can approve a development. And the Urban Water Management Plan is the foundational document that feeds into the tables that are used in the water supply assessment. And water meters, we know there's a regulation for water meters to be fully metered by 2025, and any new services need to be metered and be billing volumetrically for all services that are metered. Demand management measures is a regulation of its own that's now incorporated into the Urban Water Management Plan. The state has also issued a water efficient landscape ordinance, and the state requires that all cities, charters, and counties have some form of a landscape ordinance, and so they provided this model water efficient landscape ordinance so that cities can easily adopt some form of a landscape ordinance. And then finally, urban water plan has to consider the local general plan for consistency with population growth and housing needs that might be discussed in a local general plan. So that's the overview of the urban water plan. I wanted to get real quick into the baseline, how we set the baseline water use and the target reduction goals. So this is the starting point for an urban water plan, is setting what the baseline per capita water use is. And what that is it's the gross water used within the system divided by the total population. So it includes all potable water uses. What they allow you to take out of that calculation is if you have recycled water or transferred water, but you would include even your pipeline losses. So commercial, landscaping, pipeline losses, residential, all your water that's used in your system divided by your total population. they have you look at that over a 10-year period, base period. So 2000 to 2010 is our base period. And the result was that the baseline water use was 261 gallons per capita per day. Then you have to set a target reduction goal to be met by the year 2020. So the first basic approach is to just say 20%, which turns out to be 209 gallons per capita per day. They allow other alternatives, such as taking regional targets and going to 95% of a regional target. And they have other specific methodologies you can use to set a target, but they really just favor water systems that are already in a conservation mode, so they're not further, they don't have to conserve more than they already are. So we looked at all those methods, and the 20% is by far the least reduction possible. So with the 20% reduction, it's 209 gallons per capita per day. The urban plan also requires an interim water use target that would be met by 2015, which is just the average of the baseline and the target by 2020. So they say this interim water use is something you would report on in your 2015 urban water management plan, which is due in 2016, and it would just show progress being made towards meeting the goals. So looking regionally, here's a figure that just shows some of the regional baseline water use and target water uses. We're in the San Joaquin River region. Regionally, there's a calculated baseline of 248 gallons per capita per day and a 2020 target of 174 gallons per capita per day. So if we went with that second methodology, we would have to be 95% of that as our reduction standard. So we went to the 209 instead of the 95% of 174. Here's a table that just shows some other agencies that are nearby within the same region and what their urban water management plan baseline and targets were. So Discovery Bay has a target of 209 as compared to other agencies that are all below 200. So that's where we're at. So once we have the baseline and the target projection, the target reductions, we look at forecasting based on growth. We looked at population growth. We worked with Rick to determine what population growth we might expect in the system. Up to 2020, we have a known set of developments and a kind of a schedule, and that's pretty well defined. And so we can look at the total service connections from all the planned developments up through 2020. Beyond that, there really isn't any other. Beyond that, we're at build out, basically. That's the build out of the master plan is by 2020. And so beyond that, it's really an unknown if there's gonna be some other developer that wants to try to, you know, bring in a development and, you know, propose expanding the service area boundary. We would expect there to be quite a lull in that process, given that the current developments have taken at least 10 years to get through the permitting and environmental process. So anything beyond 2020, we've assumed there would be no growth for at least 10 years. And then beyond that, if there was some development that took place and they got through the environmental permitting, we just assume the 3% growth beyond that point. So that's why the curve kind of shows a lull between 2020 and 2030. The red line represents the water supply projection. Now the master plan, the way it would project water supply, it would just follow the population, because that's what the master plan does. It looks at your population and it wants to plan for the proper amount of capital improvements to stay on top and ahead of the water production needs. The urban plan projection is purely based on the goal of meeting a 20% reduction by 2020. And since I'm gonna zoom in on that projection on my next slide. So this is that same thing that zoomed in. To see the master plan red line shoots up, follows the population projection, says, well, we're gonna need a new filter and a new tank, and there's some other capital improvements that might be needed to meet that production. Whereas the urban plan, if that production was actually achieved, would be way below that. There was a 20% reduction in water use and only a 17% increase in population. So it actually resulted in net result in a slight reduction in the water production. So moving forward, if the goals are actually met, if those 20% reductions are actually met, that would result in a net reduction in water use annually, which would reduce pumping and treatment costs. Potentially, it would reduce the maximum day demand because there would be some emphasis on reducing summer demands. That's the only way really to get the 20% reduction overall, is to have some reduction in the peak amount that's used during the summer. And there could be revenue impacts to that too, especially if you go with meters and everybody's billed volumetrically. So then you'd have to reassess rate structures and make sure that the operating budgets are, you know, are being met. So the CIP basis, what I mean by that is the capital improvements that are based in the master plan, those wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't recommend changing those based on some forecasted 20% reduction in conservation. You can't really bank on that. That's just a goal. And so in the master plan, we think you'd still want to stick with this this plan, though pay close attention to what's happening with water demand over time as you start to implement conservation and see if it, if you know, if there is a basis to update water demand, meaning the maximum day demand and the peak hour demand, which are design parameters used to provide the capital improvements. So typically you need a 10-year basis to say this is the new water demand regime. You need a 10-year basis of data. So I just have one slide on system supplies. I don't think I need to go into it too much. We were going to be discussing some of the groundwater sustainability plan stuff after this, and essentially what we're stating in the urban water plan is that we have a reliable groundwater supply. We're not concerned with issues pertaining to the groundwater supply, and we don't have conservation as a result of issues pertaining to the groundwater supply. One of the sentences I cut out of the report states, water levels and water quality data indicate stable groundwater conditions at current levels of pumping, and that would also apply to these forecasted growth levels as well. We would predict that there, we would estimate that the groundwater levels would be stable even with this planned growth. We also have a discussion in the report on recycled water opportunities, and we worked with Herwood Engineering to get some information on that. It's required to discuss what other types of water supply might be at the available to the district. There's a current project that Rick and Gregory Harris was informing me about, where there's a wastewater treatment plant on site recycled water project that's going to offset approximately 28 million gallons per year of potable water. I mean, that's going to be a 2% reduction in total annual water use. So that's gonna work towards this conservation goal. There's also a future treatment system that needs to be installed to meet discharge requirements from the state board, and that's going to involve a tertiary treatment system, which means that all of the discharge coming out of that wastewater treatment plant will meet Title 22 recycled water standards. There will be an available water supply after that point that could be used within the system for recycled water. I think the problem is infrastructure to build that kind of a system. There is purple pipe systems that have been installed in newer developments, but it would require a 5-mile pipeline to connect to that system, and then there would still be the concern about water quality from that Title 22 recycled water, because there's still going to be salinity and boron in that. So if you're using that water to feed landscapes, that's just another design thing that would need to be considered. But the potential savings, you know, we would estimate to be approximately 150 million gallons per year. That's a rough estimate based on the areas that have purple pipe and the potential landscape water uses on residential and commercial in those areas. So we have to discuss water supply reliability in the urban water plan. And again, we stated that the groundwater supplies have been reliable. They've been reliable, in fact, through previous and current drought conditions. Discovery Bay is also taking action to develop a groundwater sustainability plan in accordance with the Groundwater Management Act. And in terms of reliability, Discovery Bay ensures that there's enough supply wells, enough infrastructure and wells and treatment and whatnot to meet the maximum day demand at all times. And then we also provided a water shortage contingency plan, which is a plan that would be enacted in the event of extreme loss of water, such as a catastrophic loss of wells. And I think the current mandatory state reductions would apply. So finally, I'm going to go over these demand management measures. Don't worry, I'm not going to go through every one of those items, but I did want to point out there were 14 of them that had to be identified in the urban water management plan. And you have to state if there's a program. They're basically different types of programs that an agency might implement to conserve water. And it's required to discuss each one, say how this particular agency is going to adopt those programs, or if it's not, why it's not. If it's not economically feasible, statewide, it's not economically feasible. In working with Rick, we kind of eliminated some of those. So we scratched some right off the bat, which were ones that related with rebate programs. There was very minimal water savings relative to the cost for the rebate programs. And furthermore, there's not a real concern in terms of water shortages within the district's well systems. So we were focusing more on things that are required, such as the water meters, commodity rates, and things that can be very helpful, such as public information, which is really a good tool and doesn't have a big cost element with it. And so those were the main command management measures we focused on and wrote about within the plan, and the others we stated were not cost effective, and we provided some supporting information for that. So this is a figure, a pie chart, that's really telling, I think. This is the annual water use by sector. So 72% is single family residential, annual water that's used. There's 10% in losses, and that's pipe losses, that's unaccounted water, that's water that's not metered or operational water, but it's probably mostly leakage. And then there's the 13% annual water use, that's irrigation. That's the large irrigation users for you know, public landscape areas. It's a much smaller portion for commercial and institutional, 3%, and then multifamily residential, 2%. So here's a curve, here's a combination of curves that represent what the annual production looks like throughout a year. So during the winter months, it's obviously lower, and it peaks around the summer months associated with outdoor water use. So this base water use during the winter, this is an average between 2010 and 2014. This base water use was 780 million gallons per year. And this peak water use was average of 470 million gallons per year. So that's a total of 1,250 million gallons per year. And that peak summertime use was over 50% of what that base water use is. And that base water use is indoor water use, it's businesses, business running as usual. And then everything increases during the summer when outdoor water use picks up. So one approach to, one conceptual model that is kind of what these demand management measures, the demand management measures kind of state what the water reductions are, but the urban plan doesn't require you to tie that with a 20% reduction. They just want to know you have a 20% reduction and you have some management measures in place to help achieve those reductions. But taking a closer look at that, let's say we achieved a 20% reduction in single family residential and multifamily residential between now and 2020. That would result in a 14% reduction in our total production. And we had some sort, and there was demand management measures to back that up, such as meters, commodity rates, conducting voluntary surveys of people's homes about how they can become more water efficient, doing audits in terms of looking at leakage throughout the system and providing public information. And then landscaping. If landscaping were to reduce by 20% by creating some sort of landscape ordinance that looked at how much water is required for the specific plants that are there, and providing weather-based controllers to not water when there is precipitation in the air, you could get a savings in landscaping. If you were to reduce it by 20%, you would have a 3% reduction in total annual production. Finally, losses in the system. There's 10% of the water used in the system is just loss. You know, it's not revenue water. And this wastewater treatment plant project is gonna cut that down by at least a quarter. That's 28 million gallons, which is about 2% of the total annual production. Furthermore, if you were to put in meters on the system and you were to look at the system as a whole, you could become more systematic in terms of targeting pipe leakage and replace pipes that are leakier. Focus on those, and that can result in a recouping some of that water loss as well. So if we were to look at all of that, we would say the model for a 20% reduction by 2020 would involve a curve that looks more like the green one, which is maybe a 10% reduction on the base. So that's indoor water use, just more efficient appliances and being more aware of how you use water indoors. And then a bigger reduction on the peak. I mean, that would be kind of a typical strategy that's used for water conservation. So that's what I wanted to cover on demand management measures. I'm sure there'll be some questions on that, but the next steps moving forward with the urban water management plan will be obtaining comments on the report, that the draft report that's there right now, updating that report so that it's in line with the district's goals, and then once it's ready, providing a 60-day notice of a public hearing. So there will have to be a public hearing of the draft to review it and adopt it if there isn't any other changes made at that public hearing. And there needs to be a 60-day notice prior to that hearing. Concurrent with that 60-day notice, we would provide a copy to DWR just so they can make sure we've checked all the boxes and met all the regulatory framework for these reports. Provide a copy to neighboring agencies so they can, they know that the district is pursuing adopting this plan. And then 2 weeks prior to that public hearing, making the draft available for public review. And then the goal would be to adopt the plan following that meeting if there are any other changes. The final report needs to be sent to DWR, to Contra Costa County, to the Cal State Library, and from then forward, it would begin implementation of those demand management measures. So that's what we have prepared for our presentation. Sorry that went so long.
That's fine. Good information.
Any questions?
I got a real quick question for you. How many, John, how many gallons? What's the number of gallons approximate in an EDU for water?
0.37 gallons per minute per EDU.
How many gallons in a day?
That's a lot.
I'm just trying to get from 120 million gallons, how many EDUs does that represent?
From what? From 120 million gallons?
Approximately, yes.
Oh, I see.
Calculators out?
Yeah, I'm...
the reason I bring it up is because a couple things. If we reach those goals and the Urban Water Management Plan includes in there a Director Simon's most favorite topic in the world.
Water meters.
And it includes that program starting within the next fiscal year. Not just from an educational standpoint in the next fiscal year, and then a rollout in the subsequent 2 years. And if you reach those numbers, and if we get that 120 million gallons, what's that number?
Is that in a month? Or is
that your annual number?
Oh, that's
was that a monthly number you're referring to, 120 million, or is that an annual?
120 million.
Off your chart.
Okay. Which chart? I'm sorry. Not one of these charts. Way at the beginning, right?
No. I think you were talking about diverting. If we reach the 2020 number, we save about, I think you said 120 million gallons annually, which is about 2% of our overall.
Yeah. If you get to the 2020 numbers, you're that would be a 20% reduction in your total annual water.
Okay. The reason
per capita water.
The reason I bring it up is because with meters, I think that unless people really, with volumetric pricing, at the prices they are today, we don't have a level playing field, as you are well aware, with respect to residential. We do have a level playing field with respect to commercial and our large user accounts, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. But one of the things that this, if we save money, the master plan, save gallons, the master plan identifies a number of projects, like Justin indicated, that it puts water in the tap. There are a number of projects that are listed in the master plan that if we reach these goals you've identified in your presentation, that there may be significant capital improvement savings from projects that we might not have to build due to the fact that we're conserving large amounts of water per capita. Is that correct?
Yeah, so Rick, first take that first bullet, 20% reduction, and they know from different cities that had full meters put in,
meters for monitoring, supply, and billing customers right off the bat to get a 20% reduction in water use. So having meters just equates with a decline in water use, right? Now, getting back to there's some discussion that compared the water master plan to the urban water management plan, where the water master plan that we did for you before had the capital improvements on it, and a whole, and it assumed no conservation. And we have to assume that, because if there's no conservation and people use the water, they turn on the tap, they expect it to be there. So we have to, as engineers, design it so it's there. Now, if we invoke these conservation measures and there's a period of years that go by and we prove that we do have a serious reduction in water demand, then the savings start to kick in terms of the capital improvements that we need. So that's sort of a silver lining in all this. I think the other thing is that had this drought never happened, we'd be sitting here today doing this urban water management plan and it'd be a checklist. Yeah, we did this urban water management plan, but now it assumes all this additional significance because it's on top of a drought. And so this is more relevant now, and so that's why the first part was kind of confusing too, because the governor, we were doing this urban water management plan and there wasn't any government emergency plan laid on top of this. So now there's the government coming out and saying, hey, we want a 35 or 25% reduction, and then figuring out how that fits with this urban water management plan is another challenge.
And the max daily demand, that date was sometime in 2008,
I believe.
So in 2008, there was a day in July or August, if I recall, that was the highest volume of water used in the community in a 10-year rolling period. And so once we get to 2018, that number could either go up or go down, and it's trending down.
Oh yeah, it'll go down.
Which would have an impact on our future capital.
Capital improvement plans would be less.
So with respect to the DMMs,
yes,
there are a number of things that are listed that we're looking to do. We're looking to bring this to the Senate, to our peer agencies, as well as bring it, like I said, let the state take a look at it and then come back to you. So if that's all I have to mention, and if the board has any questions or comments, certainly now would be the appropriate time.
Go ahead.
Just a couple things. Trying to look at this thing from sort of the least painful things that might be done to the community versus, you know, the more aggressive DMM issues. In terms of the water loss, looking at something between 7, 10, 12%, whatever our losses are, is there a way to quantify what it would take to tighten up the system to reduce those losses? It's one thing to say, yes, we can reduce it by 5 or 10%,
right,
but is it cost $100 or $100 million? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I guess because that would relate with where your losses are and what they are. If it's little leakages that are throughout the system, or if it's one older section of pipe that just needs to be replaced, you know, that's a tough one to answer on the spot right now. But, I mean, I think looking at leakages would involve first assessing what they are. And so you first need to know what your water deliveries are to get a good idea of that. I mean, right now it's just an estimate with the 10% losses. And so
the 10% is an estimate?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The reason why it's an estimate is we don't have flow meters. And so we have to guess on the water demand and we have to guess on the water losses. Once the flow meters are in place on the individual users, then the difference is the loss.
Now, if assuming
that revenue water, becomes non-revenue water.
Right. Assuming that this was a metered community,
yeah,
and looking at other metered communities that you might work with, what is a typical unaccounted water loss number that you might see?
Well, I think 10% is a reasonable number.
That's
I think it's on the higher end, but it's not unreasonable in terms of what some agencies have.
Right. This is a newer system, so I wouldn't assume that there's a lot of water compared to loss compared to, you know, a San Francisco.
Correct.
Something.
Yeah, and it would be associated with the older pipes typically. Yeah.
And then switching subjects to recycled water, I mean, we have obviously a lot of possibility to use probably have a lot of recycled water that could potentially be available. Hard to get it to where it needs to be.
Yes.
Looking in the report, you talk about, you know, the water coming out of the plant having sort of a high salinity, high boron content. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem for landscape irrigation, or is that a discharge requirement?
Yes. So when we put the 150 million gallons as the potential recycled water, mm-hmm. the recycled water potential, that was based on the fact that what we've seen other agencies do recycled water is kind of a 50-50 mix. They won't go 100% recycled water because of the salinity boron issues.
Gotcha.
There might actually be a 300 million gallon per year irrigation usage in those areas, but when it comes to reality, you may not use 100% recycled water on that. So we said, well, let's assume 50%. Just that's kind of the method agencies have gone through, but they've gone through it by trial and error too, by saying, well, let's start watering recycled water, and their grass starts dying, so then they have to cut back on it, and 50-50 is just kind of
okay.
Standard.
So they're doing a blend and mm-hmm. trying to work out the most appropriate,
right?
Which might be appropriate maybe for trucking water, or some other way for small landscape areas that people might want to maintain, or even at the local house. I mean, watch the Dublin San Ramon Services District, people pull up the 55-gallon drums and take them to their house.
Yeah. I was just going to go back. I think the 18% number was thrown out, and that was the difference between 13 and 14 that you get some credit for just from the savings that had occurred during that period. 2% is related with the use of non-potable water, a reduction at the wastewater treatment plant. I think that's supposed to be online, Rick. Is that in a month or so, where they have the backwash?
I'm looking behind you to Bernie.
Yeah. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
So there's another 2% there. And then, so you're looking at, whether it's going to be 35%, and finding that other 15% is the number that then has to be looked at, and how are we going to achieve that?
And then the reduction is based on the treated water that that comes out of our treatment facility?
Yes.
So if groundwater prior to the treatment facility was used, it would not count. Or would it?
That's an interesting technical issue there, because they do.
I want a technical issue.
Well, they call it potable water. Yeah, it's a potable water, reduction in potable water.
But the groundwater pre-treatment, is that potable water or is that not potable water?
If you could change that, take a fraction of that you're not going to treat and say that's irrigation water, you can offset something. Perhaps there's a strategy there.
I mean, it's a small percentage, but I'm looking for everyone I can get.
But then you'd have to like think of distribution systems and getting the water to the spot too,
And then has the state come up with any thought on grants or loans to agencies to implement some of their demand management issues?
Yeah, I know that several of our agencies are looking at a bunch of different grants and the money that's available. But as you know, the economic state of California is difficult at best. But there are grants and that out there, and everybody's vying for the dollars that are out there now.
The potable water issue with respect to coming out of the wells as raw water and being used strictly for irrigation, prior to our treatment plants going in, from the inception of Discovery Bay until those went in back in 2002, the water came directly out of the ground and went right to the houses. Has the state changed, because I know there's still a lot of people on wells in more rural areas that don't go through a treatment process, they just use well water. Has the state, for urban suppliers, are there any requirements there, or would they still consider groundwater to be potable water for this scenario?
Yeah, I just think that the state would view the water coming out of the ground as the water supply being used. It's the reason we have a treatment system is to treat the secondary contaminants for iron and manganese. And there typically is an urban water supplier, at least some sort of a disinfection standard. Even though it's groundwater, it's considered to be filtered through natural courses. But in terms of meeting the reductions, I don't think that type of approach would fly. I mean, it's because it's a measure. It's reducing the intent is to reduce watery taken from your supply source, you know, from your potable water supply source. So I'm going to think about that a little more, though. It's an interesting idea.
Mr. President, if I can, I've made an introduction to the rest of the board, and I'll make an introduction again. Curtis Keller from our office is here. He's our leading water expert, water law expert, and he may have an answer to that question.
You know, there's two different issues. One is, as a public water supplier, can you provide untreated raw groundwater? And you'd have to meet the water quality standards that a public water supplier has to meet, and that is a treatment standard or at least a disinfectant standard. So that's probably separate from, I think, what's being asked is, can the use of raw groundwater be used to meet some of the reduction requirements that are being levied? And the answer to that is, well, it would not become part of your potable water system. It would not become part of your public water supply if that were the case, and the state is not willing to entertain that at this time. It has been asked for certain other areas that's similar to Discovery Bay or 100% groundwater. What if we just don't treat it and we use that water supply on our landscapes? And they haven't entertained that as a possibility for reduction because they'll consider it as part of the production by the public agency or the public water supplier.
So then is it my understanding, based on the new restrictions, that we don't have a supply for our landscape based on if the state comes out and says you can no longer use potable water for landscaping, right? We have no supply for our landscaping then, is that correct?
I think you have to look at your landscaping and in terms of meeting the state mandate to get the reduction, and I think that's the intent of the governor's drought bill, is to say, hey, you know what? We have to think about these lawns, and we have to think about this landscaping and changing that up, and that's they're targeting it.
Yeah, in an emergency, they're considering those to be the first to go, for sure, but...
So we're not there yet. They haven't said no potable water for your landscape.
No, they have not said no potable water. They have not said it's not... No, they're not saying it's not allowed to water your lawns. They're saying you need to reduce water by 35%, and
okay,
that's the easiest way to get to it is to water it less.
they did say, though, that you cannot water grass medians in the public right.
That's right.
That is prohibited.
You cannot water grass medians.
That is specifically prohibited.
We don't have any.
Yeah, we've got a few small ones over off of
They have
Discovery
not said
Plains.
That residential landscaping is prohibited. They've said that public median.
We have a couple islands
it's
out
not grass.
We have public landscaping that's not a median.
Ornamental turf. That is a grass specifically.
It's different.
It's not trees or bushes then.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
But we do have, Virgil, how many islands do we have? Three?
Three.
Three that have turf that are in residential neighborhoods. One at the end of Discovery Boulevard.
Two.
Two down Discovery Boulevard and one over off of Discovery Point.
And then the amount of water we consume as a town for our own processing out of the plant is a very small percentage. So any sort of reduction in that really just doesn't have much effect on the overall plan. Is that
2%?
Huh?
2%.
Yeah.
It helps.
Every percent helps. 2% sure.
There.
Sure.
I got a question, and I think I heard the answer to. You said you had to have a 10-year data basis. And my question was, do we have it? So I don't know. If we've gone back far enough, I think you just mentioned 2008 or something was a number that was established as a starting point.
Yeah, 2008, when we did the master plan and issued that in 2012, we were looking at a 10-year basis of 2000 to 2010. And what we found in that was 2008 had the maximum day of use. And so that became the basis for what the design point is for the maximum day demand is 2008 July. and is when it occurred. So not until 2018 would we have a basis that doesn't include that 2000.
It falls off.
Right, so until it falls off the data set.
So it's a rolling year by year or month by month.
Yeah. That's what's written in the Title 22 standards for sizing of water systems, essentially, is the, for the maximum data demand.
It's like your golf index. Low scores fall off the index.
Correct, yeah. I'm well aware of that.
I just want to put it in something you could understand, Bill.
I got that one.
Okay.
How did we estimate a single-family water use on the non-metered?
That's a good question. We basically just used, without anything else to go on, what the meter use was. So that's the use. And that, with commercials that are metered, then you add in everything else that's metered, and you compare that to your total water production, and the difference is loss. You know, there's not, without a meter, there's not anything else to go on.
Wow.
But we also know what our total production is, and we know what we're selling to the community in terms of meter through the residential
Correct.
And commercial side.
Right.
We throw in a percentage for loss,
uh-huh.
and we back out what we use at the treatment plant. And that gives you an idea of how much volume is left for the rest of the side of the town, correct?
Correct, yeah. So in that method, you would just be throwing a loss number. Where you say, well, let's say it's 7%, you know, but yeah, you know, so that's an approach. They don't say how you arrive at that, but the approach we took was, well, let's, without anything else to go on, take the meter data and apply that to all the services for those that are not metered, tally it all up, and the difference between all of the metered and the non-metered. And the total production, the difference of those would be your losses.
What's the percent residential, correct?
I think 50% is half of the residences metered right now?
Because about 40%.
About 40% of the residences are metered.
A good percent of the unmetered.
Yeah. So needless to say, without customer meters provides you know, a lot of unknown in terms of where the water's going.
I'm sure we're going to get into water meter installation, et cetera. I think Manager Howard mentioned that. So is that a discussion for another day, or is that a discussion today?
It's on the urban water management plan. It's included in the urban water management plan from a timing schedule that I discussed with Justin and John, and that I presented back to the board back in January or end of January at the workshop, which had a three-year implementation program. The first year would be community outreach, assessment, community outreach. We've already started the first part of that when we transitioned to the Badger meter reading system that we did about a month or so ago. And then about a two-year rollout to two-and-a-half-year rollout period to get everybody, the rest of the community metered. One sidebar to that is, the other day, we have, with the new readers, there's an ability for the customer to go into a portal, and the portal will then, they can sign up and they can get email or text messages that they have a water leak. So if they're out of town or something, and Virgil happens to have one of the demonstrations, one at his house, and he got a text message alert that he had a water leak last week. And so he called his wife and says, we have a water leak, go find it. And sure enough, they had a water leak. And 24, 40 hours later, they came back and the text message said, you don't have a leak.
Four hours.
So that's really the beauty of the type of system we're rolling out to, like, for the customer, and that we know where there's leaks in the system from on the other side of the meter box, if you will. It's the ones that are on our side of the meter box that are sometimes more difficult to locate.
My question with that being that it's been declared an emergency drop system, do we want to entertain trying to speed up the rollout portion and the education portion to try and help meet some of these demands?
That's certainly a board prerogative.
Okay, well, see how the rest of the board feels about that. Is it appropriate to talk about tiered water rates this evening?
Tiered rates, this obviously dovetails from a conversation that you and I had yesterday afternoon. Tiered rates, as I mentioned earlier, from a residential standpoint, this is volumetric tiered rates. The more use, the more you pay.
Yeah, I was speaking more specifically about commercial and HOA landscapes, those types of things, not, not so much residential.
Those, because all of those, all of our commercial and all of our landscape are all on volumetric, they're all metered, the board could implement a tiered system. We would need to go and do a rate study. Rod and I discussed this a little bit this afternoon. We would have to do a rate study for that to take place, and that can certainly be done. And in fact, kudos to Director Peace for suggesting that. But the lights and bells all went on at the same time, and so it was something that we'd always thought about from a level playing field standpoint, but we never isolated the commercial and landscape side of the house off of that. So we can certainly do that.
My feeling on that subject would be to have board discussion on it, see if there's a willingness to look at that and leave the single family home on a, you know, just a set, whatever the rate fee is, and see if we can get enough reduction in water through the tiered system, which, you know, similar to PG&E does it. So it would be interesting to maybe come back with some ideas on, you know, some suggestions or something, just based along those lines, knowing how much landscaping is out in some of our subdivisions and things. I think that's all the questions on that that I have at the moment.
Go ahead.
Rick, as somebody who's obviously opposed water meter, even I recognize the fact that third day is coming, we're going to end up putting it in. And that part's fine, but even as you've said 15 times, it'll take 2 years to put it in. The thing that we're not discussing is what we can do now. We're talking nothing about enforcement. In fact, I was telling Bill earlier, I just for the heck of it yesterday, someone started driving around Discovery Bay. I went down to the marina, I walked through A and B shed, and here's all the 40, 45 foot boats, and they are spotless. Everybody's washing boats. All the ski boats are coming in for the afternoon. They're getting put on a wreck and they're all being washed. I drive by the blue tops. All the grass is lovely green. They're getting watered every day.
It's not true.
But they're
and we reduced our water 23% over last year. Look at the bills, dude.
Reduced the water.
We're better than the whole than the town is doing.
We've got the only brown grass in Discovery Bay is our grass. If you look down, I'm just saying.
The entrance way
I drove into the country club. And I'm looking at the homes in there, bright green lush grass. I'm driving down my own street, bright green lush grass every place. And I think what's happening, we need some kind of a vehicle or a mechanism to deal with enforcing, which we're not doing.
Winner, winner, you are right on target, Director Simon. If you look at the board, we, after the governor came out with 25% and then they changed the parameters on us, instead of being 25% reduction community-wide, it's now based on a per capita, per person per day use. And so Monday morning, in fact, Friday night, I sent my staff and Bernie an invite for a meeting to have a, so yesterday morning we sat down and spent about an hour and a half talking about the different ways that we can, some easy things that we can do internally as an organization to go ahead and do that. And I've changed glasses here. In fact, I'm going to stand up and read it from here instead. The newsletter, and I'll show you this in a minute, basically it's coming out 2 weeks, and it's a water issue primarily. It's a water enforcement issue. It's a drought issue. I'm proposing that we send postcards to all residents with water tips, the website, the state website, as well as providing what all the different watering schedules are, the 2 days per week, Tuesday, Saturday, and the Wednesday, Sunday schedule. We need to reach out to those non-resident property owners that come up on weekends, and my neighbor's water goes on 3, 4, 5 times a week, and I've spoken to him, but that is commonplace around Discovery Bay. we plan on hosting a water summit, if you will, for lack of a better name, at the community center, with exactly what Mark is referring to, with all of our commercial large users, and meet with them and tell them the severity of the situation, because frankly, a lot of them are just snubbing their nose at this. And when Bill and I drove through the lakes and Lakeshore yesterday, it's obvious that they have not cut down on their use. One thing we just discussed is tier volumetric pricing on commercial large user accounts. We display the message board throughout town for longer periods of time. We're going to start rolling, instead of daily, we're going to leave it out for 24 hours, and it's going to go around town every single day somewhere else. Small thing, but hopefully get the message out. One of the things that we want to do as an outreach is to buy some hose shutoff nozzles devices, so that if the staff is out there, or Bernie's staff is out there, our staff is out there, and they see someone washing their car, or washing their boat, and the hose is running, and it's running in the street, hey, here's a shutoff nozzle. Courtesy of us, please use it. Because you can still wash your cars, you just have to use a shutoff nozzle.
Is there any noticing with the landscape contractors we have out here? I mean, probably 50% of the properties out here are maintained by professionals, and we're not even targeting those guys. You know, I know my landscaper adjusts my meter, and, you know, I didn't have to tell him, but, you know, he knew. But I think we need to, those trucks are out here consistently, and we need to have it bilingual notice that, hey, here's a schedule, and, you know, we're going to count on you.
We can do that. Good idea.
I think, Rick, what you're saying is all wonderful, but that's not really what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, the state is telling us they're mandating what's going to be done. If we don't have any way to enforce this other than sending happy messages and letters out, if you send somebody a postcard, hey, we're going to be doing this, they need to be told starting today you can no longer do this. I mean, to me, if I open my mailbox and there's an official notice from the town that says starting today at 9 a.m. you can no longer water your lawn 5 days a week, and you will be subject to this, that, or the other if you continue to do it, I'll take it far more seriously than a mailer, I mean, a reach out thing saying, hey, we all got a concern. I know we got a concern.
We do that. We do have an ordinance that's board passed, and we do have enforcement provisions in it that are monetary. And so that those are there.
So we have,
do get the,
We
issue red tag notices. Virgil, can you grab one? We issue red tag notices when we see someone who has an apparent water leak, or it's obvious that they're overwatering. We'll give them we'll tag their door, and as a courtesy notice. So these are just this week alone. So.
Well,
we're out there.
Those are, we've notified that handful of folks, or what is it, 20 of them or so?
There's probably 40 here.
Just
this week.
Wow. I probably do 12 to 20 a day.
Really?
Lately.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we track them, and we go back and revisit them. And we have a tracking sheet, and we revisit them so that we know if they are continuing to violate. At that point in time, we can issue them a notice of violation, which would have a fine attached to it. We haven't done that.
Or a mandatory meter installation.
You made a comment about driving through the lakes and the lakeshore where we're already metered, right? So why are we relying on visual inspection? Maybe somebody has just got, you know, the majority of the lawns were overwatered prior to this happening. People automatically overwater their yards because they think they need to keep them green. They can cut back on their water consumption, and still, their lawns don't have to die to show that they're abiding by. They don't have to be brown to show that they're abiding by the new regulations. But we have the ability to monitor that on the big water users, such as the HOAs, the small HOAs, as well as on the homes that do have meters. And so rather than do a visual inspection, we can actually do a numbers inspection. Hey, this is, you know, we can see that you're still consuming the same amount of water that you were in 2009, so, and we happen to notice that your grass is green.
The next to last bullet addresses that specifically. Monitor much more closely the meter customers' monthly usage. And we can do that by putting the parameters in the system.
Right.
And we can notify them if we see that it's going up and it's not going down from year to year, month to month basis. We can go ahead and visit them and send them a letter. Each and every homeowners association, each and every business in the city, each property manager in the community for commercial businesses, as well as each homeowners association, including the yacht club and the country club, have received letters from me stating what the parameters are, what they can do and what they can't do. And we did that when the board adopted the ordinance back in October. So that took place then. One of the things I would like to do is to, during the summer months when things heat up, is the bullet just above that one, would be to have a, again, with board's authorization, to bring in a temporary part-time employee that can be assigned and have the role, and I hate to use the term, but as a water cop out there. And you know, it would be a summertime position, relatively low wage position, and that person can follow up, they can issue the notices. These are just some of the things we've been talking
Anybody
about.
Anybody apply?
Sure, Kevin.
some extra money.
Some of the things that we've been talking about, that I was gonna hold these items back for the item, for the informational item, since we're talking about them now, it's appropriate. I even mentioned that these guys would probably be
moving. Why don't we go back immediately and go out and look at our history of usage, what we do have data, and send those courtesy notices. Hey, you know, you're outside the median, or
we have evidence.
Yeah, you know, we'd like you just to be aware of that, and you know, that could happen real fast.
Absolutely, and that is why we're saying we're going to. We can do that. That one you can do retroactively. It's really simple to do. We have all the data.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see that year, 2-3 year timeline and what the changes have been.
I'd want to be careful to be fair about this, and I would look to maybe Ludolf and Scalmanini to give us what baseline we should use if we're going to start comparing. Do we just go back a year, or do we go back to 2011? I mean, there may be the right place to do that comparison from, as opposed to the last 12 months. So I would put a little time into it and find the right baseline year to use that might be the averages or average out the last 5 years or whatever we can use to be a fair baseline to then be able to monitor at least what we have metered at this point.
Rod just made a good point. We should probably use the same date parameters that the state uses for us. So if we're held to a certain standard, we should hold them to the same standard, so that if they're using X number of gallons monthly, and we're reporting those same monthlies, we should go back and do this.
To look at
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also like Bill's idea of having tiered rates for our large water users. Is a great idea. We should look at.
Yeah, and also I think the suggestion from staff or whatever about having a meeting at the community center for all the large water users, HOAs, everybody, and bring in. Do you have a date selected for that yet?
We just discussed it yesterday, Bill. We don't have one selected yet, but it would be within the next 30 to 45 days.
Oh, I would suggest we try to maybe, if possible, have
speed it up.
Speed it up, yeah. I think it's what's changed my feelings about it is that we're going to be impacted tremendously if we don't move a lot faster than we have, due to the fact that the governor has issued this emergency situation. So my feeling is if we can speed up the education on meters, if we can start the rollout sooner, if we can get the commercial large users in, get them educated, and also as far as the homeowners, I think the homeowners need to know that the average in Discovery Bay is, if I have the number right, 237 gallons per day per capita. They don't know that. And they need to know that. And also I think that they need to understand that 75% of their water, plus or minus, is going to outside use. So they can now really think about that and say, well, maybe I should cut back.
So I think that education can come a lot faster.
And that's a great point, because some people think that just by turning the water off while you're brushing your teeth, you're having an impact. You're having no impact. That's a thimble.
Right.
That really has no impact on your... I mean, no, it obviously has some impact, but not nearly the impact we're looking for. It's nothing. It's a thimble, literally. It's like these efficiency faucets.
Rick, I think that the letters you send out shouldn't be harsh or cruel, but they should be matter-of-fact that this is not a game. You're being told this is what you must do.
Well, we could still wear the white hat. The black hat is coming out of Sacramento, and we just have to enforce it, or we get punished.
Well, that's what should be come out in the letter.
I understand. Right. And also, if we get a fine or something, we have to raise the rates so it's the homeowner again and the users that are going to get
punished. Yeah, so we're protecting their interests as well.
Right. We're trying to educate them and say, hey, we're going to get hit with this or something. Everybody's got to work together on this.
Well, we did get started. And in fact, we've had we've had months of 30% month to month, year to year, which is pretty good.
What is our average this year? 25%, 26%.
Over the time frame that they're monitoring, we're at 18%. For the month of February or March? March, we actually had a 1% increase over the prior month, but that was 30% decrease from the month before. So when you do the average from September to now, it's about 18%, and that's what the state has in their numbers. Now, we're not sure the state numbers are completely accurate. Virgil and I spent probably 45 minutes, an hour, with the person at the state who's responsible for this program this morning, discussing with him the manner in which the numbers were reported and the accuracy of some of the multipliers. And so we need to go back and take a look at that, and we're not exactly sure right now what those numbers are going to look like, because we haven't necessarily gone in and had the chance to dive into them, since, like I say, they changed the parameters on how we're going to do this. We just thought it was a straight 25%, and now we're at 35%. And we may get down into the third tier, but I doubt it. We may move down a little bit further in the fourth tier, but I don't think we're going to reach a third tier. So it's still 35%.
What's the third tier percent?
25. I just showed you, just real briefly up here, just a quick preview. This is the this is going to be, it actually went to the printer today. It's not going to get printed for another couple weeks, another 10 days or so. But it's basically what the new rules and regs are, what our water usage is. That brown is the new green. That's the state campaign. We're going to piggyback on that. And what does it say up there? I join the effort. We're probably going to purchase about 100 of those signs. They look like political signs, if you will. And we're going to ask people to join up and sign up and put them in their front yard. And it is a campaign.
It is.
And we're going to put them in our parks, in our entryways. Let them know the message needs to get out there. So that's going to be taking place. Then the next page has what the rules are, what the laws are here in Discovery Bay, and what the consequences are, and what the fines that are being imposed, and what those are as well.
Well, we don't have any design standards for drought-tolerant landscaping, do we, that we can give to the homeowners? And can we put together a rebate program where we give them $500 towards their new landscape or anything?
That's certainly a board consideration. Okay. You can certainly, that can, and in fact, that was some of the things that we had discussed. They mentioned that there's this 2010 model efficiency water landscape ordinance. We have not adopted that. We can certainly bring that back and take a look at it. And Rod is emailing me all the documents just a few minutes ago, so I've got those now to take a look at. We can bring that back to the board as well, at least to take a look at.
I just saw in the Bay Area they're doing this similar thing.
Yeah, they are. You know, there's toilet rebate programs, there's washing machine rebate programs. I think it's a good thing to at least have some sort of rebate program out there to encourage people to conserve water. A lot of the communities newer, so they have the new low flush toilets and the low flow shower heads and that sort of things, but the older part of the community does not. I know my home doesn't. It's an older one, so.
But these guys are saying it's landscaping that is causing.
It is landscaping, but
it's not toilet flushes.
But every little bit helps.
Yeah, and there is going to be time limited rebates as part of this emergency drought regulations, and it'd probably be good to piggyback on those as much as possible, and even incorporate it in the urban water management plan, where we could write it down, you know, in there as a program being to at least inform residents of these rebate programs and somehow incorporate them.
Yeah, I would suggest we use the programs the state has.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know where we'd get our money, but.
Because we're just asking. It's kind of a magic trick. I mean, it's kind of a smoke and mirror thing, because we're taking their money that we take out of their rates and we're giving it back to them. It's really not.
But if we put the state website and make it real easy where the homeowner can go and get these things on our newsletter.
Or maybe we tell them to turn the water off and we paint their laundry in.
Oh, you're going to do that.
Yeah, I will.
But that could be something in the postcard that you're going to send to all the residents, is have something in there that gives them a website to go to for rebates for water saving devices, and maybe even a link to their, the drought tolerant, the state's probably got some drought tolerant things in there. We can set those up for them.
Yeah, and we have some links that we could share as well, just regarding like conversion of front yards, conversion of lawns into gardens or into drought tolerant landscapes. It doesn't have to be expensive and fancy, and it can still look appealing and feel rewarding. So there's different.
Can we grow corn and tomatoes in the front yard?
That's what I'm doing. Seriously, my wife did this. And she's actually starting kind of our own little local grassroots program. Sorry, it's kind of a side topic, but to help people who think it's a big chore and a big job to take out their lawns, and it's actually not that bad. And so it's about information, really. And if people want to do it, they need to know.
Sort of connected with property values too. If you're going to go with brown lawns, there's an aesthetic issue there. So if you're going to ask people to go brown, it's like, what's the best way to go brown? Like, what should they do if they go brown?
Yeah, is it cacti, or is it
succulents of some sort? How are you going to do it?
Or it's not good grass. It's garden. Yeah. Like that. Or a combination of both.
Right.
Any other questions, you guys? Any more discussion? Any public comment, please come to the front.
You're not public.
Go ahead, please, Virgil.
I obviously you've been in the business here for a while, along with these three gentlemen, but some of the things, if you're looking at emergency-wise, you ought to be considering either new turf, on new homes, or backyards. The HOA on the golf course, we were going to reseed some of our areas. We decided not to because it takes a lot of water. When I brought it up to them just twice a day, if that survives, and twice a week, then that's fine. But generally, most lawns, turf takes 2 or 3 times a day, especially when it gets hotter. It's generally 3 to 4 times a day. Maybe ban on swimming pools temporarily. Those are generally 20 to 25,000 gallons to fill up. Then, if not a cover, then there's evaporation that's taking place. But I think what really irks me today that I read is Metropolitan Water District approved only a 15% reduction for their suppliers in Southern California. That irks me.
Yeah, because they got our water.
They have the highest rates. But that irks me that board approved only. Some board members wanted 25, but they got outnumbered by only 50. Mm. That really irks me, being up here and us trying to do 35. And I think we're on our way there with the notices I've been handing out and the threats that I get when I do hand them out to residents. But still, nevertheless.
Anyway, how can they approve something that's not in conformance with the government's, with the state's, mandate?
I mean,
the other thing you're
going to
look at here.
Oh, wait, that's where the money comes from. Forget I asked.
You're rolling up to Memorial Day.
Yeah, come on up, please, to the front. If you have a comment? Sure.
I just have one question. What is the reason that we can't just tell people not to water their lawns at all?
Go to the legal counsel on that.
personal rights come into play. I mean, you can't, it's pretty hard to tell somebody what they can and can't do with their own property. But if we're mandated through legislature to do it a certain way, then we can take those guidelines and implement them forcefully. And it, first of all, encourage the community to do it, and then implement them as forcefully as we need to get compliance. So we don't end up paying a daily fine for non-compliance.
So we can't go further than what the state guidelines are?
Yes, you can.
So the legal implications there is you've got a state ordinance or law that says that you can do this, and the director's got it right in terms of interfering with personal rights of individuals. You can tell people certain things, but you've got to find a reasonable relationship or a nexus between why you're going above and beyond what the state has otherwise mandated and what you want to do. So saying stop all completely, I think your easy complaint would be, well, that state's not requiring it, it's not a law, so how are you enforcing something that isn't otherwise required by law?
So if the drought got to the point where the state said that might be a good step to take, then
As you can see, what's happened over the last several years, it's just getting more and more and more stringent. And, you know, I mean, they're starting to deal with water rights, they're starting to deal with local personal rights in terms of what you have. And each and every year, you know, and they're saying next year, if we don't get a significant snowpack, we're in an absolute dire situation. So they'll continue to make more regulations to restrict use.
Thank you very much.
Any other public comment? All
right. So if that's the comment we have this evening on this subject, what we'll do then is we will take comments that we had tonight, incorporate them into the draft, we'll circulate them to our peer agencies as well as to the state, and then we'll start working on the timing of the public hearing when it comes back to the board. Chris, you missed this portion, but this item will come back to the board at least one more time, if not two more times, in a final format.
And in this plan, does it have water meter rollout?
It does include that.
Can we go over that again?
Yes.
Yeah, so Chapter 6 covers the demand management measures of the report.
What page is that?
And it covers all 14 of the demand management measures. The one that specifically is regarding metering is DMMD. So they're labeled A through N alphabetically. So DMMD is entitled Metering with Commodity Rates for All New Connections and Retrofit of Existing Connections. And the schedule that's laid out right now on that table is it was partially started.
It's on page 78 on 170 electronic.
Yeah. It's page 6-3, but I guess on the PDF it's
78.
Okay. So it's partially started in 2008 with the installation of meters, and then that program would be reinitiated in 2015, completed by 2018. So that was just it's our starting point, and we want to get comments and come to a consensus on that. But that was the starting point in working with Rick on
that's
this
different than what we talked about in the last couple months about our schedule. Yeah. It is. It's pushed up.
It's pushed up.
It's pushed up quite a bit, like 3 years or 4 years.
Well, it's pushed up from, I think
I've been about 2020.
Yeah, I've been pretty consistent with my time frame over.
But it's
not my time frame. You're right. It's your time frame. So this time frame, and that's why I mentioned earlier on, that this is the schedule that I've been recommending all along, but it's certainly up to the board. You can, the board can,
well, we were asking
can
to
move
have
it
a
forward, or
plan,
the board can move it forward, or you can push it back.
I'm all for moving it forward. I have no problem with it whatsoever.
As much as I'm against it, I'm for moving it forward also.
Yeah, I mean,
okay with the schedule as presented? Okay.
It needs to be done. Yeah. I hate to do it, but it needs to be
done. If we can even do it sooner, would be better.
We can do it, probably knock 6 months off of it, but it's still a pretty aggressive schedule. We're going to start at 6-7 months earlier.
Well, yeah, I think the education
program to start as soon as possible, so we can get the mechanical parts of it worked out behind the scenes.
So get that outline in and proposed to the board so we can approve it. Let's move forward as soon as possible.
Well, I don't disagree with that. But,
the sooner we start, the sooner we end.
Yeah. And also, I think there's some ways that we can get around some of those areas where we had concerns about a meter being in the middle of the driveway. There's ways to get around that without doing the driveway.
And this is a good time to do it because it's being mandated.
We're
in a drought, and so people will understand more today than they would have 5 years ago.
If we get through this drought and then we're out with meters, we blew it.
I can tell you that a certain person back in the room is writing fervently on this right now, so I'm sure that the word's going to get out very soon.
Well, that's fine. We got to do what we got to do. We've been elected to manage our water and the financing of our water and wastewater, and it's a tough decision, but we have to take it.
All right, great.
So we will go ahead and move that forward, take those comments. We'll make that change to move that the meter program forward, and we'll discuss that offline later.
You need a motion for that, don't you?
Just consensus is fine. This is just a conversation and a.
Mr. President,
there's three votes he knows he's got up here.
Could I ask one question off the topic while we've got council and our water experts here? Just to alleviate Virgil's concern, Met's a wholesaler. They don't provide retail water to anybody. But their customer, Met's customers provide water, and they're in the 35% category.
I don't know.
No, I do know.
Yeah, Met's a broker.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Water.
And our water experts.
Well, LAWP is 35%.
Directly, and our water experts aren't going anywhere anytime soon this evening. They'll be here for a while.
I'm done.
All right. Let's move on. Next.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The next item to discuss this evening is the groundwater sustainability plan. As you know, we have been mandated by the state that affects all water users that utilize groundwater for any of their service needs. We are in what's called the Tracy Subbasin, where we derive our water from, and we are the only water district in the Tracy Subbasin that relies 100% wholly on groundwater. So this is a very important topic for us. Fortunately, there are four other local agencies that I've been working with and have been attending meetings with and discussing with, and those are the City of Brentwood, Diablo Water, East Contra Costa Irrigation District, Byron Bethany Irrigation District. Now, while Byron Bethany does not have any groundwater here in Contra Costa County, they do have in San Joaquin County, and they're the only agency that crosses several boundaries. So they are, and they are in support of this proposal that's coming before you this evening. The five general managers of these different agencies, including myself, spent a considerable amount of time working on a plan. We have to develop what's called a groundwater sustainability agency. And we have to have what's known as a groundwater sustainability plan. There's a number of ways to approach that. Based upon the, and Tom will explain it a little bit better than I will, but based upon the geologic formations, it appears that there are three separate basins within the subbasin, and that is the Tracy portion, the East Contra Costa portion. There's a section to our east referred to as the Delta Islands. So these five different agencies have sat down and talked and are very concerned about protecting our local control as it relates to our groundwater. The southern portion of the Tracy subbasin, San Joaquin portion, is utilizing the Delta Mendota Water Authority to be there to manage their program. And as you know, they would be using the term, the big gorilla in the room, if you will. And we are concerned that they would potentially impact us negatively with respect to our water needs, that they overdraft. We manage our water, we're CASGEM compliant, they're not. So there's a lot of different things that come into contact with that. And in developing the groundwater sustainability agency, we've discussed with Tom Elson, with Ludorf and Scalmanini, and asked him to put together a proposal that would assist us in working with the state to have us change the boundary lines of the Tracy sub-basin to create our own boundary and our own basin within these five different agencies. In doing so, the proposal is would be divided equally amongst the five parties, and it would start relatively soon. And with that, I'm going to have Tom come up because he's going to be able to explain the technical details of what I've been talking about.
This legislation last year is also a result of the drought. So, does it sound like it's on? Okay. And probably wouldn't have been passed if in another year. But the implications, there's implications for Discovery Bay, and I'll comment on that. But really, the target for this legislation is the San Joaquin Valley in the south, where groundwater has been overdrafted for decades. And some of the evidence, I mean, some of the things you read in the paper that is evident of that would be subsidence. So we hear about subsidence, especially in dry periods when there's more pumping. And so that's a pretty severe problem. It's actually affecting the capacity of the aqueduct, canals, flood control in these areas where that exists. And so the state really has an emergency with respect to groundwater and sort of the overpumping of these aquifer systems. Where you're situated, all the way north of the Sacramento Valley, the top of the Sacramento Valley, where water, you know, the source of the water that's ends up being pumped south of the Delta, all the way into LA, those problems don't exist. But we're all going to be covered under this legislation. The implications, so Rick already mentioned that we're in the Tracy sub-basin, and I'll comment on that a little bit in a second. I will say that I have a mistake on this slide under number two, which is that says that town of Discovery Bay would be required to engage or form a groundwater sustainability agency under this legislation. That's not quite true. You could sit back and do nothing. Your default position could be to watch and see what happens around you. If all the agencies, water entities, did that, the county by default could become the groundwater sustainability agency, which is required to develop a plan to utilize groundwater into the future on a sustainable basis. And if the county didn't, the state could step in and do that. And so what does this legislation do for you guys, for Discovery Bay and again North? It's more complying with developing a plan and demonstrating to the state that groundwater, your resource, is sustainable. The people that are going to have the issue is south of here in the San Joaquin Valley and all the way into the Tulare Lake Basin. They're the ones that are probably going to be faced with, for the first time in history of the state, to allocate groundwater, which means there's going to have to be, within certain regions, cutbacks of groundwater, which means either if you're a farmer, it may mean fallowing land. And generally, that's the biggest impact, because that's the greatest use of groundwater to the south. There's this today, as we speak, the Department of Water Resources is developing guidelines for the formation of groundwater sustainability agencies, and that an agency can be any public entity that is involved in water supply. Planning or some authority. So Town of Discovery Bay, for example, could be a groundwater sustainability agency. That agency would be
required to implement a groundwater sustainability plan. Again, if I go to the south where overdraft exists, that plan probably involves some allocation of groundwater, meaning restrictions on groundwater pumping. For East Contra Costa County, that's not the case today. Groundwater conditions seem to be stable at the levels that we're at. However, 10, 20, 30 years from now with growth, that might change. And so a groundwater sustainability agency that's formed in this region may be faced with decisions later on to restrict groundwater pumping. So what's important about this legislation is that it does give some entity an authority to affect your use of groundwater. This graphic shows Tracy Subbasin, which is the three areas that are colored there, and the state, the default position of the state is that groundwater sustainability planning and the formation of agencies shall be done at a basin-wide scale. And so Rick mentioned that actually in your basin there's some logical sub areas to that you might consider as or that have some distinct characteristics that might logically form or call for maybe separating from each other. So the East County area in the green, the Delta Islands area in the red, there's no groundwater use. On the Delta Islands or the Delta area, that's where surface water comes in. There's no groundwater pumping. The groundwater that occurs there is generally salty. It's pretty salty, shallow, and that's one reason. But the predominant reason is that historically, that's just irrigated with surface water. So groundwater is not an issue there. The south, what I'll call the South Tracy area, is where the city of Tracy is probably the predominant user. Rick mentioned the Delta Mendota Basin, which would be south of that purple area. And so that's another basin that actually has some more severe problems than anything in the Tracy sub-basin. And so one of Rick's concerns, and I would share it, as a consultant, you know, you can try to give you technical advice, but in terms of an agency in another basin coming in and directing things or having a say, seems to be counter to not only the legislation, which seeks to maintain local control, but it doesn't make sense from the standpoint that nothing in the East County has ever been affected by, even in the purple area, but certainly not the Delta Mendota area. So that's something we've discussed as a group with the other East County entities that Rick mentioned. And so there's significant concern, I think, with just how this shakes out in the long term. One possibility is that maybe a Delta Mendota Authority might be the Groundwater Sustainability Agency and look at Discovery Bay or City of Brentwood or Diablo Water District and say, you know, we need to assess some fees here to not only support our management of this area, but, you know, there might be some reallocation of groundwater to solve problems elsewhere in the basin. And again, the state kind of supports that because they're saying that in many areas, there's been local problems that have arisen that require some authority to come in. They'd like it to be local, but it isn't. You know, a regional scale approach might also be acceptable. So this is the picture that we're kind of considering. Rick mentioned there's some logic behind separating out the East County. One aspect is that our boundary with the Delta Islands is the San Joaquin River. It's a hydraulic boundary. We don't really know, and I think this board has asked questions when I've made a presentation before. It's like, what is our source? Why are groundwater conditions the way they are? One of the things we lack is information in that red area because there's no groundwater pumping. There's no wells. And so it's sort of an interesting situation, but I've got my final slide here will show you groundwater conditions and I'll highlight the unique characteristics of your resource here. The other thing to think about in turn, the other thing that we've discussed with the various East County entities is that the only connection, it's really geographical today, not necessarily geologic, between South Tracy and the East County area is where that purple meets the green. It's right about where Mountain House is, and there's really very little groundwater pumping. any wells there have very poor water quality, and so the pitch or the need to sort of interact or engage Tracy and even the Delta Mendota area becomes sort of a stretch at best, because it historically we've seen no connection between whatever's going on in the south portion of the basin and the East County. And I'll also point out, because I know that you're familiar with it, because for nearly 20 years you've participated in the East County Water Management Association, and so there's been a long history of cooperation between the East County water agencies to manage not only surface water, but you have a groundwater management plan. You've complied with the state requirements to monitor groundwater elevations and report those to the state. So you've been on top of everything in your area. And on top of that, there's no evidence that there is a sustainability issue. The only concern would be what happens if you lose local control. So besides the fact that a sustainability agency has to develop this plan, here's some of the authorities of a groundwater sustainability agency. Number one under this would be, it could impose spacing requirements on new groundwater well construction. So it could say, well, maybe you want wells on 1 mile spacing. We think it needs to be spread out, maybe 2 mile spacing. This may have more implications elsewhere in the valley. It would control groundwater extractions by regulating, limiting, or suspending extractions from individual wells or in aggregate. So that means they might look at not only what you're doing in the urban water management plan and you've conserved, but there may be a need someday to say, or somebody may determine that there's a need, hey, we'd like Discovery Bay, Brentwood, Diablo Water District to cut back another 10% in order to solve some maybe more regional problem that exists in this sub-basin. And so, again, I think the local control, the local knowledge, the Department of Water Resources has stated that's where they think the power or the authority should lie, and that's I think is the impetus behind the work that we're proposing to do and the work that Rick's been conducting with the other entities in meetings and developing this plan. So the purposes of the specific objectives of our work will be to identify the appropriate boundaries. So Rick mentioned that the state does recognize that there is a potential in some instances to revise boundaries. What I've suggested from work we've done over the years here is that there is some logical boundaries. I mentioned the San Joaquin River. I mentioned that the basin actually pinches down to the southern end, and there's poor quality, and there doesn't seem to be a strong hydraulic connection there. And so we're going to meet with DWR in less than 4 weeks, and we're going to present the scope of work and some of these ideas that we have. Part of the scope is to also look at an alternative submittal. And in the legislation, there's the potential that if you can demonstrate that you've been sustainable for a number of years, you can avoid the regulations under the law. So you wouldn't be bound by the same requirements that are going to be imposed on some of these basins I've mentioned in the San Joaquin County and southern part of the Central Valley. And so you can avoid all of that if you can demonstrate sustainability. And I think my next slide is my last one, but this makes kind of the point. And I presented this slide last February, and I updated it data from a few weeks ago. I think I'll just come over here and point out a couple things. So last year, this chart went to about here. And so the first thing I'll point out is that with data I think we got from Virgil, here's your water use in annual production going from about 1,300 million gallons down to 1,137 or something like that in the mid-1100s. So last year you did see a drop. All these dots are water level measurements in your production wells. And so one of the ways you evaluate sustainability is to consider your water use. So here's the history of, history of Discovery Bay from the late 80s and pumping growth. and really stability the last several years, in part because of the 2008 downturn. Things sort of, this is kind of what you see all over the state, but during this period, and even throughout here, we saw early on water levels up here kind of declining a little bit, but actually rising the last couple years. And kind of an interesting situation because we've had four dry years, but Discovery Bay's water levels are very stable, if not slightly rising. And this is your unique position in the Delta, where you don't have competing pumping right around you, and you're also at a confluence of all the water in the valley that's trying to get to the ocean through this restriction at the Delta. So it's unique. It offers the potential for this East County area to go to the state and say, look, here's our conditions. We've been stable for a long time. We have a history of water resource management. We're gonna submit this required report, and based on their review of that and approval, and they're developing guidelines for that right now, you could avoid the requirements of the legislation that are, again, are really aimed at other portions of the state where the problem really is going to require some restricted use of groundwater. So that's all I had as an overview of the joint work that's being proposed between Discovery Bay, Brentwood, Byron Bethany, and East Contra Costa Irrigation District. The Contra Costa County will also participate, and I think it's important. In the legislation, the county is the default agency if nobody else steps up, but the Contra Costa County does not want to do that, but they are the permitting agency for your wells. So if you go out and drill a well, you have to go get a permit from the county. It's ministerial in nature, and it involves making sure that the wells are constructed to code and that they don't offer sources of contamination, or they're constructed a certain way so that they don't allow contamination in the aquifer, but we're going to rely on them for a key role to identify other pumpers in the areas to make sure this planning process recognizes all the things that are going on in the East County area.
Will the county have any influence with the state with regards, since they are the ultimate agency, with regards to our desire to isolate within the county our own district?
I think, first of all, they have stated at the meetings they don't have the expertise to even make that judgment. And
can they take our word for it?
Pardon me?
Won't they take our word for it?
Well, yeah, I think they will. They're looking at this as a partnership. Harder for them to just provide money for this. They've never historically managed groundwater or tried to, and so I think their participation is important, but they're not going to step in and say, hey, we don't like that. I think they recognize that the expertise lies in these agencies, and as Rick said, you guys rely on groundwater 100%. You have the most not only at state but at the strong history, actually the almost the best history in terms of groundwater utilization.
And we also, by stepping up, take it off their plate, right?
The county has been very forthright. They do not want to be the ultimate agency at the end of the day. They want to be a part of it, but they want this group to form. Good. And they've indicated that they don't even want to be an equity partner, which in this process, so it's five instead of six, because they don't do any pumping. They don't. Right. So they need to be part of it from a advisory standpoint. They'll participate in the meetings, they'll be part of the overall organization. But the focus of this proposal that Tom is presenting to the board tonight for consideration is strictly to develop the GSA and the GSP and the GSA as it relates to our agencies here in East County. As you know, I've been informing the board off record on a number of occasions with respect to status, and this is the first time you've seen it publicly, other than in emails that I've sent to you. But this isn't going to be the last time. You're going to be getting a lot. This is going to be over the next couple of years. You're going to be very, it will be a regular item on your agenda moving forward, maybe not every month, every couple months, but it will certainly be regular topic discussion moving forward. We recommend that the board, or I recommend that the board move forward with it. I've actually been very supportive of this proposal, as Tom indicated, primarily because of our unique situation. We've got the most of this. And I, you know, I think I mentioned to you that, you know, my skeptical side says everybody else wants our water, and I want to make sure that that doesn't come true. So, and the old saying, the water, whiskey's for drinking, the water's for fighting for. So here we are.
Is there a, if I understand this properly, this is a new system of regulating and kind of watching on the local level, just statewide. So there's going to be a number of these agencies set up throughout the state.
Okay, right.
So it's the beginning of a new layer of regulation, yeah, if you will. So are you aware of any other multiple agencies in different portions of the state that are putting together their similar MOU as what we're trying to establish here?
Yeah, I mean, I would call it, at this point, a lot of posturing for that, because you can imagine that, I mean, in East, you know, we identified four plus the county, or five plus the county, you know, agencies just in this area. In other areas, there could be five times that many. And so then who, you know, who's going to step forward, who wants somebody to step forward, and who's going to, like, you know, cooperate with that. And so, as an example, there's, I'm working with one group where they're kind of near next to the river like you guys are, but then farther to the east, there's pretty severe overdraft and subsidence. And yet the state looks at it as one basin. And so, you know, that you got people with two different conditions trying to either see if they could separate themselves from the other ones or make sure they have equal status in a GSA. So that is happening all over. There's actually a website now where people are submitting themselves as a GSA, as a sustainability agency for mostly small basins where it makes sense and there's one logical entity. But I think that's the next thing you'll hear. And I think, at least in your area, and you're part of the Tracy sub-basin, there's a long history of cooperation, and at least internally within that area, it seems like everybody's working together for a common goal. nobody's splitting.
Right. Who is the department or agency that would review this MOU and give it approval?
Yeah,
or give it
Department of Water Resources is developing guidelines for those agreements and would ultimately then review them for compliance to those guidelines. So the State Water Resources Board tells the department, develop guidelines for every aspect of this program, and then it falls on the department then to take the review the MOUs, determine the appropriateness of it. And that's why early on our first order of business in this work is to meet with DWR and explain to them our concept and get feedback. And Rick's already been to one meeting where it was combined, the two sub-basins combined, Delta Mendota and Tracy, and you know, they were proposing some different concepts than I think locally the group has discussed before.
The proposal that they have, that they floated out, the committee I attended in Tracy, was that there be one supersized, if you will, GSP, groundwater sustainability plan, and within that there be three separate GSAs that have their own GSPs. And whether that's a good idea or not, I don't really know yet, but my concerns are still the same.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good idea to me, because at some point the big dog in the tent is gonna run over somebody.
Well, we're meeting with the state in Sacramento on April the 27th. That was a meeting that our group called to meet with the state. They've offered to meet with us, and so we're meeting with them, and actually...
So we're on the front end of the approval process, statewide, basically, or one of the front front group's coming. Okay.
I don't know where we stand in that.
I think that's fair to say. From, you know,
let's say the top 10% anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
What the agencies will look like. What is there a time frame when? Let's assume we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
A drop dead date when somebody's going to bring a hammer down and say, well.
Yeah, there's a the whole point of the legislation is to set a time frame for groundwater sustainability plans to be implemented and be operating. And so for a basin that you owe, like yours, it's either 2020 or 2022 that you have to have the plan
in place.
But a lot has to happen up to that point.
Yeah, the agency.
The agencies have to be formed. Yeah.
What the just had a senior moment. your process, the proposal that you're putting forward today. I mentioned in here you're going to have incremental billing, which is fine. Will this take us all the way through to, we have the agency, but does it include the plan itself?
The intent, and it's item Ford over there, which is to, I've mentioned a couple of things, is like, can we make a case for going to the state and saying we should be considered our own sub-basin? That's one, and it's a technical question. So we would review geologic information.
Right, supply our technical
exactly.
information.
Right. And then is there enough information also to just bypass the whole thing and put up the plot that I have?
Oh, okay.
Something like
use
this.
Use that as our plan to show
yeah,
that we've
so,
done it.
So
okay.
the way I, and we're applying this in another situation, over in actually Napa County has similar concerns and similar conditions. And so the concept is to maybe bypass the whole thing, still establish a local groundwater sustainability agency, but show with work with things like this much more back in back of it.
We don't need that extra point.
We don't need the other stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And okay. so the end point of this proposal is that we have a body of work that, and the way that I tried to develop it is that if, for example, even if we thought it was good, the state might say, well, we'd still like you to be part of the whole Tracy sub-basin. We see your point, you look pretty stable, but we'd still like you to follow through. Well, we've done the work to do that. All the work that we're proposing to do.
You still have
just,
to do it anyway.
You just put a new title on it and say, this is our groundwater sustainability plan. Which would be, in essence, if it, you know, in a simplified way, is that here's our history. We're going to continue to do this.
That's our plan.
That's our plan.
Yeah, okay. About how long do you think this is going to involve? About what's your
time? Our schedule goes to the end of the year, and the timing is such. I don't think it went into January. No. Initially, it was into November, and I think I moved it a month because we had some extra meetings. But the timing is such is that. We can meet with DWR now while they're developing guidelines and
help them develop guidelines.
Exactly, and that's what they're looking for. And B, you know, actually there's a public comment this summer on aspects of boundary basins, and so we'll be able to incorporate those and or what, you know, what we see is coming down the through that process. But then next year you got to start making decisions. And so if we waited to next year to do this work, I'd be just waving at this plot again and giving my best advice. What we want to conclude with is that here's where you should go. Here's where the GSA ought to be centered. You know, maybe as Rick right. said, maybe it makes sense that you turn it over to a Delta Mendota that has maybe a larger.
I doubt it, but anyway.
I doubt it too. I'm just saying that.
I know. Yeah. Well, I'll wrap up here. The end result then would be at the end of the year, mm-hmm. January possibly. We would have been through DWR and have gotten, we have to look positive, we've gotten our approval and our plan blessed, and we're back going.
Yeah, now the time, there is the schedule is such that the alternative submittal, which is a term that's used to sort of bypass the regulations by showing that you're sustainable, isn't due till late at the end of next year or something like that, and so it still gives you still have time
if we need to tweak a little something. Yes, but your your path would get us there by January, possibly. Okay, thank you.
I want to add one last thing. Tom and John and Justin and the Ludorf team, correct me if I'm wrong, you work with all five of these agencies and have a long-standing history working with them.
Yeah.
Maybe not Byron Bethany as much, but certainly...
Maybe because they don't have any groundwater,
But Diablo, Brentwood, and Contra Costa.
Yeah, and I think our longest relationship is probably with you guys, but and then over the years we've done things in Brentwood, but more importantly, one of the, I don't know, what I'd call an efficiency, from an efficiency standpoint, a knowledge base, is that in 99 you participated with those other entities, and we did, we recognized that there just wasn't much knowledge about the geology and where our water came from, and so we conducted a study back then, and my proposal says we're not going to reinvent that, we're going to take that and particularly focus on that southern boundary and see if we can extend it and answer that question is, how concerned do we need to be with what the city of Tracy does and farther to the south? And so we've got a good foundation as far as previous work.
I might add that in some of our early master plans too, we always encourage this sort of data. There's a lot of water companies starting now and they don't have that historic data, and it's hard for them to talk about sustainability if they don't have a history. And so we're blessed with that history to the extent that we did. Of course we wish it went back further, but still there's a story there that a lot of people don't have.
Mr. President, if I just have a comment. I know and have been in some of the meetings with Tom and his group. I think maybe I'll just provide a slightly different perspective on the issue. We've met with DWR independently with some of our other clients as well and just try to get a feel for how they are going to look to agencies and what they want. I think that the perception and the concerns of Rick are incredibly important here with respect to Discovery Bay, its interests, how it's a little bit isolated with respect to the basin as a whole with Tracy, Delta Mendota. And I think that the effort that Tom and his group are describing is incredibly laudable, trying to maybe separate them out of a sub-basin and get a bypass on some of the requirements, show an alternative that you guys are a distinct geological area separate from the southern area. Our conversation with DWR that is going to be a difficult hurdle to overcome. You know, Tom's group is going to have to be tasked with coming up with some distinct geological information to get DWR to buy into that concept. I think it is incredibly possible, and if it happens, that is a huge benefit to local control in East Contra Costa County. Even if it doesn't occur, though, what Tom's group and their proposal shows to me, at least, is it's giving you the ammunition that if the state doesn't allow you to separate out and you have to play in the same sandbox as Tracy and Delta Mendota, what I would imagine Tom is going to come up with is that water balance budget for the East Contra Costa County, that this is our makeup and our groundwater characteristics, and that it would be inequitable for the southern portion of a very huge basin to come in and tell this East Contra Costa County area what to do with its groundwater and how to operate. So while I think that on the front end, maybe his item task number 1 and 2 will, if successful, put you guys in a wonderful position going forward and DWR will recognize you as a distinct area, at worst, what it does is give you the background information for your area, understand your characteristics, that if you do have to work with those other agencies and coordinate, which the requirement of the legislature does have, that Tom has already provided you and armed you with that information. So I don't want you to get to a point, you know, at the end of this year and think that, you're going to be assured that you have a plan approved and signed off and a smiley face from DWR, because this isn't something that's going to go away. This is a huge, huge undertaking by the state that you're probably going to be involved with going forward for many, many years. But it's a good first step, and a first step that I think that agencies that have a mind to the future are taking. So I just want to give you a little bit maybe of a broader step back type of perspective.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and there's not one aspect of what we're going to do that is overcommitting to, one goal. So when we talked to everybody at Curtis, when we were at that one meeting we were both at, the concept would be that you got to do this anyway. So let's do it in a logical way that gives you stepping off points along the way. So that could be mean that if DWR was satisfied and you know was willing to engage, then maybe we do separate out. But if not, we just got to keep
that, keep going
developing that technical information, because you've got to then engage other parties. And if you come in with no information and they have information, you're just going to have to accept theirs. And that, you know, in a real simple way, that's the whole point.
I'm just looking for recommended action to approve 1/5 of the overall contract amount for the town of Discover Bay at $23,658.40.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Public comment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. President, members of the board, the next item is informational only. We've exhausted it, the conversation, and I will pass on any additional information regarding that. It's in the agenda packet.
All right. Well, thank you. All right, thank you guys very much.
Hi, Bernie.
Good job. How about this other? Move on to item H1, Veolia report, and second.
Thanks for your presentation.
Thanks.
Yeah, excellent.
Very
thank
well
you.
Done.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you.
We're all moving electric cars too, right?
Self-driving.
Sit in the back.
My car is self-driving.
I know, I
mean.
Turn that microphone off.
Yeah. Do it over here and over there. It doesn't do it like
me. Yeah, hey, Bernie, how you doing?
Yes, absolutely.
I think we can make this pretty quick.
All right.
My report. Continue safe practices. Do a little bit of training on the dye store, which is a sand filter. Project is going on. We're currently doing using ethanol to do nitrification, see if it works. So, and then we had some new air meters we purchased. All permits were submitted on time. All wells are running well. We did have a, as Rick mentioned earlier, the water usage this year compared to last year was up about 1.5% to 69 million. Last year we had around 67 million at the same time. All back tees samples were negative. You can just see the slight hot, or the purple line there for March. All NPDES wastewater permits were well within below their permit limits. No permits excursions, no back tees issues. All lift stations are running as designed. Flushing is done. All of the town has been flushed except the new construction area. We're just currently loading all data together and getting the pipe graded. Put it into a program, it grades the pipe, and then we'll have a list coming out of hot areas that need to be looked at. And then maintenance, 213 work orders. We got a little bit of backlog, but we're working on those. And only 7 call outs, which were minor. Any questions?
Our backlog. We don't have the usual, are we?
Well, we try to keep it around 30, but we worked on some aging ones, and we also been assisting with the construction on some projects like the screen getting it put in and stuff like that. So.
Are we full strength?
Yes. Plus one.
Okay. Oh, good.
I got some summer help here. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you very much. Item I, manager's reports.
I will be brief. Out front when you came in this evening, if you noticed your new 2015 F-Ford F-154 pickup that's being assigned to landscape. I actually drove it today for the first time. So we'll appreciate that.
But over time, that's going to be paid for by the county because of our village purpose.
Correct. And just to remind you, Earth Day is a week from Saturday.
What time is that?
Well, it is week. It's noon to four, a volunteer project at the dog park. We've got a lot of great activities planned, so we're looking forward to it. And we do have, I want to thank Bernie's in the room, $2,500 donor from Veolia, Ludorf and Scalmanini, $1,000 donor, New Miller and Herwood, $2,000 donor, amongst a number of other smaller donors. So very grateful to what they contribute.
Yeah, Earth Tag could come, but if you can have it on Saturday, we'll be in Texas.
That's great. All right. Any future agenda? Actually, no, go to legal counsel, please.
Unless Curtis has anything, I have
any report. Cool. Any committees met? You guys are slacking on the committees? Or? That's just a meet every month. What's going on?
Yeah, we met with the landscape committee.
We did.
And things seem to be going fine. And
water and wastewater got canceled.
Water, wastewater.
Tuesday coming up.
Oh, okay, I thought
we have one coming up this Tuesday. We moved it up a day, and we had and the you reported on that at the last meeting from March.
All right, that's great. Thanks, you guys. All right, any correspondence here? Yes, a few things. Any future agenda items?
Yes.
Please.
For the May 6th meeting, I would like to agendize for discussion and possible action with regard to transparency of district operations and decision-making, that we have a discussion of the board subcommittees being publicly noticed meetings and that they be conducted according to the requirements of the Brown Act.
I believe our board committee some meetings are already complying.
They are not.
Yeah.
They are
what
not,
meetings are you talking about?
They are not publicly noticed. The public is not invited.
I don't understand what meetings you're talking about.
The board subcommittees.
The board subcommittees.
The water. No, they are not, Director.
Which one are you referring to? Give me an example.
They are not publicly noticed.
Give me an example.
Every committee meeting you have held since.
That's not true.
I would like it agendized, please.
Well, but I understand. Can you explain what you mean, though?
What subcommittee?
You're just naming a general.
It's
that's not a subcommittee.
That's not.
The Water Wastewater Committee.
That's not a subcommittee.
Let me talk.
Okay.
Thank you. Let me pull out the list of our board committees and subcommittee assignments. We have 5 subcommittees noticed on this sheet that we all approved. These meetings are not noticed to the public in accordance to the Brown Act. I'm suggesting we have a discussion at the next board meeting to make that happen.
I don't know if it's what comes called subcommittee. I guess it's
well, that's on that's on the document that we all approved.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Any other future agenda items? Are we going to be meeting at the next at our new comp site?
We hope to be. It will definitely be May.
Definitely be
made. It won't be Earth Day, right?
That's
it
half a promise.
It won't. Well, Earth Day.
It's not ready.
we don't have enough. There's no meeting in there on Earth Day.
No, I know. We said we're going to have it ready in April, and now we're stuff in the May. So anyway.
This is what it is.
Yeah. Extra. All right. Good. Any further agenda items? All right. We'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you, guys.